this hour to contribute. Thank you for your support. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at KPFT Houston.
Welcome to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. It is Monday, December 3rd. I don't have to tell you about any elections for a couple of weeks. Isn't that refreshing? All right, on a more somber note. So, within the past week or two, Houston lost a very important member of our community, Ray Hill, important member of our community, literally legend in his own time. We also lost George H.W. Bush, or Bush 41, as he's sometimes known. And what always fascinates me, maybe a little bit in the case of Ray Hill, maybe somewhat in the case of George H.W. Bush, you know, there's a line from Julius Caesar that occurred to me. It's from a very famous speech, and it's really the first part that I think is applicable here. It's Mark Antony speaking at the funeral of Julius Caesar. "Friends, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears," is how it starts. "I come to bury Caesar, not to praise him. The evil that men do lives after them. The good is oft interred with their bones. So let it be with Caesar." Now, what I find interesting about that particular quote is that's not what we do. Generally, the evil is interred with their bones, and we try to, at least initially in the let's say, mourning period, we try to put their best foot forward, so to speak, after death. I find that interesting. You know, don't speak ill of the dead. Sometimes I wonder why. The dead did good. The dead did bad. The dead did questionable. Sometimes the dead did evil. Sometimes they did saintly things. I think that whole spectrum kind of deserves to be talked about. And that's actually, I think, the first question I want to raise today. You can call Open Forum 713-526-5738. 713-526-5738. So we can talk about, not necessarily specifically Ray Hill or Bush 41, although we can, but also this tendency we have to gloss over the negative parts of a person's life when they're recently deceased and focus pretty much exclusively, for the most part, on whatever positive things that we can bring forward. I'll give you what I consider, anyway, a perfect example. When John McCain died, one of the things that they gave him credit for was that during the presidential election of 2008, when a woman stood up in the audience and said that Obama was an Arab and she didn't trust him, and McCain said, no, he's a good man, he's a loyal American, and you saw the talking heads that were talking about John McCain after his death, and saying that that was like a great moment in the campaign, that you had John McCain standing up for Barack Obama. And they implied that this was something he had done often. But if you followed the campaign, and I'm not going to say that I've seen every single thing he did at every single campaign stop, but when you watched the coverage of the campaign, this was the only time he did that. There were many times he was standing at the podium and you had people yelling that Obama's a Muslim and Obama was born in Kenya. And, you know, he would just kind of smile and not say anything. He didn't say yes. He didn't say no. He didn't bother to correct anyone. And that's why they only had one clip of him doing that. So, you know, my question at the time and still is, why is it that the one time he actually corrected that misconception, that he gets credit for in the afterlife, and all the times that he did not correct the misperception, that he didn't necessarily endorse it, but he didn't contradict it, there's a lot more of that video. I find that really interesting. They didn't want to talk about that. You know, whatever good McCain did, and, you know, before the year 2000, I think a lot of Democrats could have voted for him as a conservative, as a reasonable conservative. After 2000, when he got screwed over by the Bush 43 campaign, I think he became embittered and he kind of learned how to play. And whatever he would talk about, the fact is he voted the caucus, which is where Rachel Maddow says, watch what they do, not what they say. So I think both of these, I think that this whole kind of tendency to leave out the bad and only talk about the good, making the recently deceased seem almost saintly, I don't know. It's sort of in a way inhuman, because how much, you know, it's like, is there beauty if there is no ugliness? Is there good if there is no bad? How much credit do people living or dead get for the good they do when they have the potential to do bad or have done bad? And, you know, it's like the ancient Egyptians believed that you would go to the afterlife and your heart would be weighed against a feather. And if the feather was heavier than your heart, you went to Hades, or the Egyptian equivalent. You know, this is a very thought-provoking topic to me. So if you want to talk about this, I think it would be intriguing. We can also talk about some other stuff, like, you know, the fact that Trump is in Argentina and walked off the stage and left the Argentine president standing there like, what am I supposed to do now? Okay, 713-526-5738. Just some stuff I'm tossing out. There's a lot of things in the news you can talk about if you don't want to talk about one of my topics. Can we take the first caller, Scott? Scott, you're on the air. How are you doing today?
Thank you. I was leaving a restaurant and on Houston's west side. A waitress noticed my Mary's T-shirt, and we had a pleasant conversation.
I'm sorry.
She had lived in Montrose, and you know about Mary's?
No, I don't think I do.
Oh, okay. A gay bar in Montrose that was opened in 1970 and closed in 2009. It was rather countercultural. I was there first in 1971, and I could smell smoke on the patio, and they were always playing Take a Walk on the Wild Side. And there are gays who would not approve of that place.
Is that like a gay bar anthem, Take a Walk on the Wild Side?
Oh, well, Take a Walk on the Wild Side, it was a song about a sex worker. Then he was a she. Hey, babe, take a walk on the wild side. Okay, well, there's an element in a faction in the GLBT movement that is interested in assimilation, and another faction is interested in the freedom to be different. I think I'm more in the latter pole, and I think Ray Hill was definitely not on the assimilationist pole.
You know, what's interesting about that is I think at some point every minority group that enters an area dominated by a majority group confronts that. You know, I think one of the best examples was the Jews in Europe. you know, there were the Jews that were very, very Orthodox, and they stayed to themselves, and they married within themselves, and they kept kosher, and they lived in very specific neighborhoods, sometimes defined by government, sometimes not. And then you had, especially in Germany, in modern Germany at the time, you had very assimilated Jews, Reform Jews, conservative Jews, agnostic Jews, atheist Jews, Jews that on the street in their normal lives, except for maybe Jewish holidays, were indistinguishable from the average German. And as always, among the Jews, just like among LGBT, as you're describing, there was always this dynamic tension, even this sort of intramural argument, should we assimilate or should we embrace our difference? So I think almost every ethnic group at some point or another, when they move into a place where they are a minority, they have to address this. And I think, like with the Jews and like with LGBT or GLBT, as the case may be, you're going to have differences of opinion, and different individuals are going to take different paths.
Well, would you believe Mary's opened under the Nixon administration, closed under the Obama administration? Isn't that rather contracyclical?
In what way?
Oh, Mary's had... Nixon would be totally against Mary's.
Yeah. Which may be the best reason for it to exist.
Defiance of the conservative mood that was in the country, except the country was actually rather split on culture. Mary's was a place where, as I said, you could smell marijuana at times, and a lot of other countercultural things there.
So I assume they've remained closed. They didn't, interestingly, reopen during the Trump era, have they?
Oh, no.
That would be an interesting counterpoint.
Yeah. Yeah, I imagine something else will open.
No doubt.
But, okay, and why did it close under the Obama administration? Well, I think one reason was that not so many people thought they needed it. Also, a lot of gay men, like myself, had moved away from alcohol.
Well, I think, you know, there's timing and there's coincidence. And every business has its time. And, you know, I had one instance of that last night. I was going out to eat a belated turkey dinner. And in that subdivision, in that complex, there's something that had been there for many, many years called Aquarium World.
Uh-huh.
It was a wonderful tropical fish store, saltwater, freshwater. When you came in on the right, they had a huge, like, 5,000-gallon tank. And it was, I mean, I think it should have been a tourist destination as well as a business. And it's been there, I think, almost as long as I've lived in Houston. And apparently now they have closed.
Yeah.
I will mention in passing, I never bought anything there, but if I had room for an aquarium, I would have loved to have had one. I used to be quite the aquarium guy when I was younger. And, you know, I have to keep reminding myself, and the same thing when I go back to New York where I grew up, I have to keep reminding myself, businesses are not heritage sites. Businesses are not institutions. Businesses are there to make money. And just like humans, they have a lifespan. It can be, in the case of a club, it can be a year or 5 years or 10 years. In the case of something like Sears, it can be 150 years. But all things live, grow, and die. And it's sad and it's disappointing. And as you get older, you notice it more and more. But it is just sort of the cycle of life and business.
Well, yeah, you know, St. Mary's was open almost 40 years. And you notice that I'm sort of interested in keeping its memory alive. And I wore that T-shirt in a restaurant that is not particularly gay.
Mm.
Yeah, and it's that way out on Richmond Avenue, out in Republican land, I suppose.
So a little nose tweet for you.
But I got a friendly reception from one employee.
Okay, and I have to tell you, Scott, I'm going to need to let you go and go on to the next caller, but I enjoyed the reminiscing with you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig at KPFT 90.1 FM, and you see, we talk about a diverse number of subjects, including nostalgia. The number is 713-526-5738, 713-526-5738. You can call with anything on your mind or a topic I toss out or something that someone else mentions. And next up is Maud, M-O-D, I'm sorry. M-O-D, how you doing?
Maud's okay. Just don't call me late for dinner.
Yeah, I know. That's an old one. So what's up?
Oh, sorry. I gotta love it, man. I mean, you got everybody on here. Mike, everyone calls in all across the spectrum.
I like that.
I think that's good, really. I just was listening to the Indy show on Friday night, and they were talking about money, the Pentagon, and audit, Price Cooper Water or whatever.
Price Waterhouse.
Yeah, and I went back and I started looking, and I see that, before Teddy, or before, at 1915, the U.S. was $1 billion in debt, and then after 1919, which,
First World War,
it was over $25 billion in debt.
Right.
And I'm looking published at the Michigan State University scholars.
Now, keep in mind, now I have to ask you, that is not adjusted for inflation, is it, or is it?
No, that's actual. That was actual.
Okay, so those were 1919 dollars. They were about $25 billion dollars in debt.
Yeah, I can't imagine what it is now.
It would be about 10 times that.
At least. So this professor, Mark Skidmore, and his team of scholars at Michigan State University did an audit, basically a study of the Department of Defense in December. It was published December 11th last year. And it's over $21 trillion embezzled or unaccounted for. And this sort of reflects the show that was on last Friday, saying that they started an audit.
I'm sorry. Did you say? You say embezzlement?
Yeah. The report basically states there's complacentness at the highest levels of our government, where it's not the $400 hammer or toilet seat we heard America during Reagan time.
It's probably abuse of things like expense accounts and whatnot.
Well, I think that's a lot of money, right?
And now keep in mind, it's not $21 trillion of what was the word you used again?
Trillion.
Yeah, but it was extortion. It's not $21 trillion of extortion. There is a fraction of that $21 trillion that probably is improperly spent, whether it's on defense programs or expense accounts or personal stuff that, they feel like the money's floating around there, they might as well use it. As a percentage of the $21 trillion, it's probably relatively small. But as Everett Dirksen used to say, a billion here, a billion there, pretty soon you're talking real money.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, I heard another buzz. But, in the middle of it says that, from the highest levels of our government, through our Congress, with carte blanche, troughs or money put aside for appendage or expenditures, the money is never accounted for. So it basically shows, roughly that our congressional branch is involved and then the black ops part here. I didn't go too much on that. But what I wanted to do, Mike, was just say I mentioned last show about the ideologies and how the neoconservatism came from Russia, and I went studying some more, and it'd be real quick.
Yeah, be quick.
That the folks that started going really quick with Reagan, right? Do you remember Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher with
only too well.
Okay, so that's called neoliberalism, the spending, the unregulated capitalism. And then the neoconservatism that came to Chicago University from Russia with love, Ivorns and these guys that came to the States, and they basically started it too. And that was, what I'm trying to get to is, it looks like when 9/11 happened, Mike, the war, indefinite war against terror, really started going, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that neoconservatism policy that was brought in from, all these war chickens, neo-hawks or neocons, Republicans, didn't change when Junior left, did it? It stayed, right, with Obama?
Well, I think I need you to kind of digest this.
That was the point. The party changed. Bill Clinton did what no Republican can do as far as deregulation. And now I'm saying the neoconservative party, foreign policy was with Obama. He actually made all the crimes that Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld do legal.
I don't think so. I think, and I mean, we don't have time on the air to go into that because we've already kind of gone into some time.
Okay, well, I got just 1 or 2 minutes then.
So make it one.
Yeah, no, it gets short when I get on. I know. So if Trump comes around and the Democratic Party is nothing but capitalists, and what happens is called when neoliberal Democratic policies from South Chicago Economics or what we're seeing now, Trump, it's called neo-fascism.
You know, so, I have a problem with all of these neo-this, neo-that. I think neoliberalism is a term that conservatives and libertarians have been pushing to confuse the issue of liberalism. You know, it's like alt-right is a term that the alt-right has been pushing to cover the fact that they're fascist, Nazis, white supremacists, and racists. You know, I'm not big on all these euphemisms. I mean, I do occasionally use them, but I like to call them what they are.
Can you accept the term of unregulated capitalism as what you mentioned? You referred to Karl Marx recently.
Karl Marx, I guess, referred to unregulated capitalism.
That's what we're talking about.
But unregulated communism and socialism are equally bad in their own opposite ways.
Right, and these are all offsprings from Russia.
No, I don't. I don't
hear now with unregulated capitalism.
I don't buy that. I don't buy that. I mean, certainly the Russians are playing their role in the West, especially these days. There's always ideology and ideas and culture moving back and forth. Because of my mother-in-law, I find myself watching a lot of Chinese variety shows. It's amazing the number of English loan words and phrases that they use on a show directed at the People's Republic of China audience. Very, very intriguing stuff. So
I'll leave you with this, Mike. It's that, you know, Sun in 1902 loved China and China loved Sun, but
Sun Yat-sen,
like
you mean?
Opium.
Sun Yat-sen?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so Mao came up the ranks. Yale went.
Okay,
China.
We're jumping ahead many days. I got to let you go, M.O.D.
All right.
We're drifting too much.
All right, bye.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye. Okay, you're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. I want to point out you can support KPFT anytime by going to kpft.org. We actually have a really cool KPFT Christmas ornament. It's really neat. It's shatterproof. It has a new logo. Instead of having the dove, it has a musical note. It's very pretty. It's red with white lettering. It's three and a quarter inches around, and it's got a 2-inch logo print. And it is, you know, if I had a Christmas tree, I'd probably buy it. So take a look at the website, kpft.org. See what that Christmas ornament looks like and see if you'd like to decorate your tree with it and help support KPFT at the same time. You can also visit my website, thinkwingradio.com, where I have all kinds of links and stuff to the shows I do, plus I occasionally post other articles and whatnot. And you can also follow me on Twitter, at thinkwingradio. Okay, the phone number, 713-526-5738, 713-526-5738, for those that weren't paying attention the first time. It is open forum. You can call about any topic that has interested you, maybe today on the radio, maybe over the weekend on the news, maybe something you've noticed or observed personally. That's what open forum is. So the next caller up is Brad. And you're on the air. Brad, how you doing?
Doing well, thank you. Hey, MOD was talking about the trillions of dollars that are missing. Of course, you and I know, of course, MOD knows all that money went to that base on the far side of the moon, right?
Yeah, that's one of the places that it went.
Yeah, okay. We finally, you and I agree on something.
What's that?
Aquarium World was a pretty neat place.
Oh, my God, it was wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, I don't... have fish, so I never bought anything. But yeah,
which is why they're closing.
Whenever a business closes, and it's like, oh man, it's too bad they closed. And it's like, well, do you ever shop there? Well, no, but it's still too bad. And yes, yeah, I feel guilty.
I still, on occasion, did get season passes at Astroworld. So
yeah,
I'm so happy about
that. I would have shopped at Aquarium World if I had had space for an aquarium. I would have loved to have like a 50-gallon aquarium. When I was a kid, I had three different aquaria with all kinds of fish, and I was into breeding, and I knew Latin names. I was really into it. So yeah, I miss it, and I miss them.
Yeah, you know, you were looking at, you know, talking about Shakespeare, Julius Caesar, and speaking about the positive on the people who die.
Yeah, the good is no longer interred with their bones.
Are you going to be fair when Barack Obama dies? Are you going to be critical of him? If you're still doing this gig, you know.
If I'm still doing this gig. Well, I think that my gripes with Obama are a little different. I don't think he was destructive to the country the way, say, Trump or Ronald Reagan were. I think Bush 41, you know, to the extent he was like a third term of Ronald Reagan, I don't think he was beneficial to the country. I don't think he was as destructive as Reagan. I think that when Obama passes, unless something dramatic changes, like he becomes a Supreme Court justice or ends up becoming a senator or a governor or something, I think that my gripe with Obama is going to be similar to my gripe with Jimmy Carter, which is that they were weak leaders against strong opposition.
You mentioned McCain, how, you know, he said that Barack Obama is a decent man when that woman called him.
He said it once.
Okay. But are you going to be critical when Barack Obama was speaking to some Christian group and said that, Mitt Romney, he's not one of us?
I would have to see that quote. I don't know that he said that.
Well, it's actually, you can hear it because he said it. I didn't read it. I actually heard his lovely voice.
Well, let me tell you something about quoting. Mitt Romney said that Barack Obama said something during the campaign, during the 2012 campaign. And when they were questioned on it, it was like, well, the thing that Barack Obama said, he was actually quoting something somebody else said. So it's not something he said. He was just repeating a quote in the context of some further discussion. And the campaign manager for Mitt Romney said, well, nonetheless, he said it, didn't he? Now, that's just outright deception.
Well, what about when they did that with Bush Sr., the one that just died, when he was at that trade show? I guess it was for a grocery, for grocery stores.
And he didn't know how to pay.
It was a new type of scanner, and he acted like the way it was edited on television is like he did not know what a scanner was, a laser scanner. They've been around for years.
Yes, they
and
had been around
even the
for
guy,
years.
Even the person's boss of the person who edited it said that, yes, it was a little naughty. Okay?
Well,
that's why I voted for Perot, sir, because I saw Bush out of touch. But, I mean, if I had a chance to do it again, I would have voted for Bush because I thought he was out of touch from that one thing.
Well,
that
wasn't the one thing that he was out of touch, and it wasn't censorship. It was editorial. It was editorial choice, but I don't think the context was unreasonable. In other words, people for years had been scanning barcodes to buy things.
This is a new type of machine, not an old one, a new type.
It was a scanner, and he didn't have a wallet.
You're coming to the defense of someone who edits things to favor liberals and, you know, hurts conservatives.
No, I'm supporting a thing that was edited that, even though the full context wasn't shown, the context that was shown was reasonable.
Right. Okay, and one more thing. If you get on YouTube, you can see, college students, going to some lecture, and quite often I've seen, those lectures where they get really rowdy with that Ann Coulter and that Milos guy, and I don't like them, okay?
Okay.
But I do admire Ben Shapiro. So he's smart, he can back it up, but he talks too fast for me.
Well,
but people will interrupt him, and when I was in college, when William F. Buckley Jr. went to the University of Texas, not only did people not interrupt him, when he left, he walked to his rental car where he's going to drive to the airport, and people were just crowded around him and still talking with him.
You know what?
That doesn't happen today, and I'd like to know, when are you going to condemn fellow liberals for being rude?
Oh, I condemn people for being rude. I'm more than happy to condemn people for being rude. I especially am also willing to condemn conservatives for being rude and racist and hateful and spreading awful comments. Just like when liberals do it, if they do it, I'll call them out on it, too. But let's talk about William F. Buckley for a moment. And then I apologize. I'm going to have to let you go because I do have to watch time for caller. William F. Buckley, first of all, I'm from New York, and he was he was mainly a New Yorker. He would typically run on the New York State conservative ticket for various things. He was a very, very smart man. His conservatism is not today's conservatism. He was articulate. He really had an amazing vocabulary. And the reason people listened to him and the reason people followed him out to the car and continued talking with him, even if they were liberal students, is because he was a smart, reasonable, articulate man. Show me a conservative today on the level of William F. Buckley, and I think people will give that person the same courtesy. But there is no one. William F. Buckley was one of a kind.
I think Ben Shapiro is. Charles Krauthammer was until he died.
Well, I think that all living Republicans, for the most part, I think have moved increasingly toward extreme versions of the kind of conservatism that William F. Buckley espoused. And remember, I'm old enough that I used to watch William F. Buckley. I remember him on TV. When I was in New York, he was a frequent guest on shows. I remember him. And I was never a conservative, but I never thought anything he was saying was stupid or poorly thought out or racist or hateful. He espoused conservative principles, and he did it in an articulate way, and that was fine. And there's no one on the scene today, in spite of people like Jeff Flake and Bob Corker. I mean, these are all people, you know, they're all talk and no action. They mostly just do what the caucus says, except now that they're in the lame duck period, all of a sudden they're getting brave. I mean, it's really kind of pathetic. There's no one on the right that I can look at and disagree with and still admire.
Okay.
I mean, that's...
So you have your...
I have my opinion. I think that's a fair statement as an opinion.
Okay.
But I appreciate what you're saying and your point of view, and, you know, that's why we have the show, so that even if we don't come to agree with each other, we both get to air sides. That's what we do.
Well, I'm not a... I didn't vote for Republicans this time because I'm very unhappy. I'm like George Will. You know, George Will left the Republican Party.
Yes.
Because he does not like what's going on. I don't like what's going on.
I think we may be in a very historic transitional phase. I don't know if the Republicans will cease to exist and a new party will come to exist, or, you know, and there will be a realignment of people in different parties, or if the Republicans will somehow become different. But this looks to me a lot like the 1850s transition of political parties. I think it's a real possibility that the two-party system that we know may be in for like a 10 or 15 or 20-year period of transition into something else. It'll be interesting.
It might be. But hey, you have yourself a good afternoon.
Thank you. You too, Brad. Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, you're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT 90.1, 713-526-5738. KPFT.org, we have this lovely Christmas ornament, as well as other information going on, various events and fundraisers and musical things that benefit KPFT and support local musicians. It's just all kinds of stuff, man. Go to KPFT.org. My website, thinkwingradio.com, my Twitter, @thinkwingradio. I can be naughty on Twitter, so, you know, sometimes you might want to follow that. Okay, next up is Gary. Gary, you're on the air. How you doing?
Hi.
Hey.
Oh, I had a quick comment on the passing of George H.W. I think it's time let the historians figure out we're too close to the event to really put some perspective on it. But I think, you know, he's being compared to Trump and W, and so in regard to those two, he looks really wonderful. So.
Well, I've been saying for many years that every Republican president makes you wish for the last Republican president. You know, like Nixon made you wish for Eisenhower, Reagan made you wish for Nixon, Bush almost made you wish for Reagan, Bush made you wish for Bush.
Yeah.
And Trump, man, I don't know where they're going to go from there.
Is this a race to the bottom? I'm not sure.
I think we're at the bottom. Oh. I can't imagine any Republican being worse than Trump unless, like, he's Francisco Franco.
Yeah, well, let's hope it doesn't go there.
Let's hope.
And the other thing is, I was hoping you could fill me in on what's going on in, I guess, Michigan and Wisconsin. Apparently the Republicans are refusing to follow what the voters have decided to vote in terms of giving, stripping the powers from the incoming Democrats and the governor. Is that, have you heard stuff about that?
I have heard stuff about it. I haven't focused on it. I know a little generally. And I think the same thing happened in North Carolina when the Democrat was elected there, and the last actions of the Republican legislature were to try to strip him of power. The Republicans don't like to lose.
Yeah.
You know, this is the funny thing about the Republicans. When the Republicans win, the election was honest.
Yes.
And when they lose, it was fraudulent.
It's rigged, yeah.
And I think any party that becomes that self-victimized is a party that has totally lost its intellectual and even moral anchor.
Yeah, I agree. I think I understand that what happened in North Carolina and I understand is happening again in Michigan and Wisconsin.
Yes, that's my understanding.
Establishing a precedent where if you lose in a Democratic election, then you basically strip the winners of power so you can still retain your power.
It's a naked power play, and that's what Republicans increasingly are doing. It's, you know, there is majority rule, and there's majority tyranny.
Yeah.
And majority rule is one thing, and I think most people can accept that on a level of fairness. But but majority rule also allows for minority rights.
Exactly.
And I think that what we have here with the Republicans repeatedly, over and over, nationwide, various states, is majority tyranny. They don't want to talk with the opposition. They don't want to deal with the opposition. They demonize the opposition. And then when an election goes against them, they will neuter the opposition. And there's one article that I do have a reference to. Let me just find, I think it's on page 3 of my notes. I haven't even gotten through page 1.
There's a lot going on.
There is, and I try to be overprepared. The L.A. Times had an article called, and I have a link on my website, thinkwingradio.com, and I haven't had a chance to post today's show, but I will.
Okay.
California Republicans see what happens when more voters vote, and they don't like it one bit. That was the headline.
Yeah.
And here's the first sentence. California Republicans drummed out of office by the carload in the recent election have exited whining.
Yeah.
And
I was wondering what that noise was coming from that place.
Yeah, it's like the whole state is getting tinnitus from the whining Republicans.
Yeah, well, I think this is a very troubling trend to see that continuing, that a legitimate Democratic vote, not capital D, but a legitimate small D Democratic vote happens, and the people in power figure out ways to negate the vote.
Have you ever heard of the Mexican PRI?
Yes.
The PRI, the Party Revolucionaria Institucional, Letty can correct me on all of that. Is that close?
I'll say yes.
Okay.
Close enough.
And essentially, Mexico was a one-party system. They had some token opposition parties, but they were a one-party system for 70 years until PAN, and I do not know what that PAN stands for, but until PAN had a successful run in like the late 1980s, early 1990s, and now Mexico has something really kind of like a two-party system. I have called the GOP the American PRI.
Mm-hmm.
They are a party that wants to be in power. They don't care how they're in power. They'll do whatever they have to do to be in power. They'll rig elections. Work with the Russians. They'll collude. They'll conspire. They'll rig voting machines. They'll hide ballots. They have really been shown. I mean, they even had a consent decree that just ran out this year because of the manipulation they did of elections and electorate, and scaring people about voting and putting out literature with the wrong election day. I mean, these are dirty, dirty players, and it seems to be endemic in the party. And what the party accuses other people of, I think almost always, is a matter of projection.
Yeah.
They feel it's stuff they would do, and therefore the other party must be doing it.
Yeah.
So it's a sick mindset. That's my opinion. And well, you can hate me for it, but...
Well, there's a lot of evidence to support that argument. I'd be curious to see how this plays out in Wisconsin and Michigan, and I'll look forward to your, I'm sure it'll I paid your attention.
I will take a closer look at it, because you're right. It's an important story, and I should be paying more attention to it.
Yeah, yeah, it's not a good trend if that's what they're continuing to do.
Oh, it's what they do whenever they can. That's why we have so much gerrymandering.
Well, let's hope people find out about it. And I know the Washington Post did a story about it today somewhere, but in the New York Times, I haven't seen anything on it. So I'm just curious why it isn't a bigger issue.
Yeah, I think it will be now that the Democrats have the House, because I think that now that they have real power, a lot of stuff that the Republicans in the House were able and willing to suppress and even distort, I think now it's going to be in the House a different ballgame. But, you know, we have some weeks between here and there, and you never know.
Well, a friend of mine has a little countdown clock on his computer to, you know, days to, days to the Democrats take the House, you know.
He ought to post that as a free app.
He should.
He should. Okay.
Well, thanks. Enjoy the show.
Thank you, Gary. Appreciate you calling. Take care. Bye-bye. All right, you're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig at KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. We have open lines, 713-526-5738. And in case you weren't listening the first time, it's 713-526-5738, open forum. And now, just in case you think, because I don't have a caller on the line right now, that I've run out of stuff to talk about, I try never to run out of stuff to talk about. So let's talk about the kind of permanent damage that a Trump can do. And by the way, I'm sort of playing with a new idea. You know, I simply have not found it in me to use the word president and Trump consecutively. That's why I put and in between. President, I can't do it. However, I think I could get really comfortable with president individual number one.
Oh, my, yes, I know.
I can do that. I could, president individual number one, that should be how we address him, because he is a godfather.
I guess so.
He's a racketeer. He's a RICO guy. And I don't mean that in a good Spanish way.
Yeah. Well, I think in the good old Spanish way,
that just means rich.
Yeah.
No, in this case, we're talking about racketeering.
Racketeering.
Yeah, he doesn't have the class of, say, Al Capone. Al Capone was a classy criminal, murderer. But I think, you know, Trump, given the opportunity, he seems to be perfectly happy with murderers. We had a murderer hand bump at the G20 in Argentina between Putin and Bin Salman.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, that's the killer's hand bump right there.
Yo, buddy, what's up?
The killer bro. It's like Murder, Inc.
Yeah.
So, but I guess before I take the next caller, I see someone calling in, but before I take the next caller, I just want to mention, and I'm going to digest this down, when you talk about, even if Trump is impeached, even if the Republicans, the Democrats ultimately take power, let's say, or even a reasonable Republican takes power, let's say, there's an interesting comment here that from Wendy Cutler, a former U.S. trade negotiator, that both sides, Chinese and the Trumpkins, both sides have set in motion policies that won't be up for negotiation, so it's not realistic to expect a return to the status quo. There's a further comment, and let me see if I can find it or I'll have to paraphrase it, that the Chinese feel that the United States has turned into an unreliable partner, and therefore they can no longer rely on things like trade agreements and currency agreements, because you can have someone like Trump come in and just throw a monkey wrench into everything. As an aside, they also mention in this particular article how Trump's abrupt return to brinkmanship, is how it goes, over a new North American trade deal, which he signed Friday with leaders of Mexico and Canada, underscored U.S. unpredictability. What Trump wants to do is put this new unpronounceable trade agreement with Canada and Mexico before Congress for ratification, but he wants to withdraw from NAFTA so that this new treaty is an all-or-nothing proposition. You know, think about it, and I mean, I don't mean, this is a very weird comparison, but I think it's valid. Think about your child, or your lover, or your partner, and you start off with assumed trust. You know, until they betray you or lie to you, you give them the benefit of the doubt in whatever they do. Once you catch them in a significant lie or deception, trust is very, very hard to win back. And I think that you never entirely win it back, because once there's the shadow of a doubt, I think there's always the shadow of a doubt. Even if with your heart you want to trust them and give them that belief, it's never 100% anymore. It can be 99, but it's never 100. The United States, for the most part, has been an extremely, well, not to Native Americans, but that's a different conversation. But for the most part, the United States has been a very reliable partner. We've been excellent on debt payment. We've been excellent on adherence to treaties, at least on the technicalities. I've said before on the show, I think on balance, while the United States has not been perfect, like humans, mistakes are made. But on balance, I think the world is a better place for the United States. On balance, not for everybody and not for all time, but on balance. And that's the damage Trump is doing. Trump is making us a lawless international partner, a random international partner, an unreliable international partner. And assuming that damage can be repaired, it will probably take a couple of generations, essentially the dying off of living memory, and then a really, really squeaky clean track record, so that the then living memory only looks in the history books for the stupid things this country is doing now under Trump, or as we sometimes call him, individual number one. Okay, we're listening to Think Wing Radio on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. KPFT.org is how you support the station. I think we have a really cool Christmas ornament. It's really pretty. $30 help support KPFT. ThinkWingRadio.com is my website. At ThinkWingRadio is where I can get naughty and a little edgy on Twitter. And Gary, I assume this is a different Gary?
Well, you know, I had a neighbor across the street named Gary, and his son was named Gary, so we called him Big Gary and Little Gary. And they call me Other Gary, so I guess I'm the Other Gary now.
Well, you know, I've known people named Trey because they are the third, you know, like John W. the third. And instead of calling him John, John, and John, it's like, well, you've got John and two and Trey.
Yeah, well, I was older than both of them. But anyway, I wanted to quote Plato.
Okay.
You were speaking earlier about...
I got Julius Caesar, so you're entitled.
Well, you didn't mention Shakespeare. That was actually Shakespeare.
Yeah, yes, it was. Did I not mention? I thought I mentioned that it was Shakespeare by Julius Caesar by Shakespeare. I think I even cited the act and the
scene.
Didn't
hear that. But
okay,
anyway,
whatever.
I want to quote Plato, and the reason why is because you were talking about corruption in the government and how capitalism, you know, we've got this 1% and all of that. And then,
well, that was MOD, but not entirely in disagreement.
Well, I mean, it's true. Almost any government has a degree of corruption.
Yeah, it's unavoidable.
There are occasionally good leaders, but Plato said, those who seek to lead do not deserve to do so.
I've heard that.
I think this all gets down, if you look at the history of government, the history of humanity, and it's still going on, of course, there is a certain human nature that seems to dominate, okay, for some reason or another. Look at all this is the third gilded age in American
yeah.
history,
yeah.
And humans tend to, you know, win or take all. And that explains Republicans. However, I think there was a lot of issues with the Democrats, and then the Democrats used to be the racists, and
yep.
the Republicans.
They were the pro-slavery party, and then there were the pro-black suppression party, help me out here, I'm getting old.
Well, I think the
Jim Crow party, essentially, Dixiecrats.
Yeah, they brought in Jim Crow. But it's just, I don't think it's ever, ever, ever going to change that people are people are people, and there's always going to be a level of corruption. But the reason we focus so much on politics is because, you know, there are exceptions. I think George H.W. Bush was a truly dedicated public servant, as was Eisenhower. But then you look at the issues with Clinton and some of the others, you know, so... It's not a party thing. It's a DNA thing. And I don't know that it's ever going to go away. You know, why do we always look? I mean, I've heard nothing but presidents on the radio for weeks. Now it's all George W. H. W. Bush.
Yeah.
It's all Trump, Trump, Trump. And
which is why I didn't want to put that much time into talking about it in quite that way. I really wanted to approach it from a completely different and not necessarily Bush-centric angle.
All right, but look at it this way. The communists, the socialists, there is nothing where I have learned, having grown up as a child of prosperity, now that I'm poor and broke and old, how important money really is. And there's a reason people act like they do when they're desperate and there's despair. And you know, see people driving by in their Cadillac and you're hitchhiking because you can't afford to pay a taxi, and there's a certain inhumaneness.
I've been poor. I've my sister has struggled most of her life. I have struggled for about half of my life, so I know what it is to be poor and in debt and struggling to pay bills and wondering who you're going to. I know what that's like. It sucks.
Well,
I have to tell you, first of all, I have a saying. Paying bills is easy. Barely paying bills is hard.
Well, look, and they're accusing Macron of living in a bubble and being out of touch. And, of course, we have that situation here. You know, George H.W. Bush, who was a good man, he brought us the Clean Air Act, and he brought us the Americans with Disabilities Act, and he gave a darn. He was raised as a rich man, a child of privilege. His father was a state senator. He made $1 million out in Odessa, Texas, before he even got into politics. So he was isolated, but he's a rare exception. And I think that's just look at Hillary Clinton. They had money out the wazoo. She's an attorney.
Well, now, wait a minute. That isn't entirely true. Until Clinton left office, all they had ever had was government jobs. Until they left office, they'd never owned a house. They lived in the governor's mansion in Arkansas, and then they lived in the White House in D.C. They'd never owned a house. They'd lived on government salaries. It was only afterward, when they got speaking fees and they did book deals, that was when they made money.
Well, she was an attorney. She made more than I did. But I'm going to let you go. I want to ask one question.
Okay. That's good, because we have limited time.
What is your opinion about why there's the more corrupt among us seek to be our leaders? It seems to be so, with a rare exception.
I don't think that's a surprise. I think that people who seek power, whether it's a politician wanting to be a senator, governor, president, or whether it's somebody at work who wants to be a supervisor, manager, vice president, there is a kind of person that wants power. Now, the reasons that they want power can vary very much among individuals. Sometimes they want power so that they can be corrupt, so that they can dip their beak, wet their beak, as the saying goes. Sometimes they want power to better themselves, improve their personal and family situation, but also to do well by doing good. And, you know, you've got someone like Franklin Roosevelt. Franklin Roosevelt was nothing if not a pampered person growing up. I mean, he suffered polio, which may very well have had a lot to do with his later views on progressivism. But, you know, it's possible to seek power and to be of privilege and to still have a desire to do good and to still make an effort to see what that good might look like. I actually give credit to most people seeking office. I may disagree with them, but I think the vast majority actually don't go into office to be corrupt. I think most of them go into office to do good as they see it. I may not agree with their version of good, but I don't think that they go in thinking, oh man, now the till is open. That's not what I think they do. I think they get corrupted. I think corruption is easy when you're surrounded by power and money and temptation. But I don't think that's how most of them start. And I think it's a tough thing to resist by human nature. But, you know, there are people like, Texan, the Hammer. What's his name?
Jerry something.
No, John something, I think. John
John.
Yeah, can't think.
Texas Hammer.
Yeah, and we're not talking about the guy on the commercials, but basically he was a ruthless politician. He redistricted Texas and gerrymandered it mid-census. The name escapes me because I'm getting old, man. It's annoying. I like to think it's just because I'm juggling so much information, but sometimes I just can't go with that. God, what was his name? Letty can't come up with it either. Gary, can you come up with it?
When? What year?
In the 90s. He was a powerful Republican in Texas. He was considered to be ruthless. He was really, in some ways, the perfect sociopath. In that he was incredibly charming when he wanted to charm people, but he was totally, totally ruthless, which almost describes perfectly a sociopath. And we get shares of those in power, you know.
Tom DeLay.
Well, you said John.
Yeah, I know. Well, I was obviously mistaken.
Tom DeLay. I'm going to let you go.
Yeah.
I want to say welcome home.
Thank you.
And I'm sorry about your mom. I've been there, done that.
Yeah, I know.
Welcome. We missed you. And one last little comment. You mentioned it, but who was it that said power corrupts? Absolute power corrupts absolutely.
I don't remember who said it, but it's worth remembering all the time.
Certainly is.
Okay, I've got three more callers, and they're each going to get like 1 minute each. So take care, Gary.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. Okay, throw out the next one. What's your... Yeah. No.
They came too fast, sorry.
Okay, just flip on to the next one and I'll ask the name.
Okay.
We're cutting them off. Or are they hanging up?
They're not answering.
All right, let's go to number four.
That's where she was at, not answering.
Okay, well, let's put her on the air and see what happens because it's a time delay. Hello, is anyone there? Okay, one, two, three. That's it. All right, if you want, well, I guess we don't have any more time. Okay, let me go through my list. So there's the headline, despite pause in trade war, U.S. and China's economic relationship is forever changed because Trump, individual number one. But Trump touts extraordinary meeting with Xi, says it could produce benefits far beyond trade. However, the Chinese and American diplomats are saying, no, we're just agreeing to talk. We're just agreeing to continue. And then we talked about the California Republicans. Wine, wine, wine. Yeah, when they lose, it's a rigged election. This is an interesting story. Behind Michael Cohen's deal, all the lies surrounding Trump start to crumble. Michael Cohen has been talking to Mueller and other prosecutors for months. This is very bad for Team Trump. That's at Salon.com. I will, when I get home later tonight, I will be posting this blog post with all these links. Let's see what else we got. Actually, we got goodbye to say. You've been listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM. KPFT.org is how you keep up with what's going on at the station and on the radio. And ThinkWingRadio.com is my site, and at ThinkWingRadio Twitter. And I guess maybe the quote is worth repeating from Julius Caesar by Shakespeare, Act 3, Scene 2. Friends, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. I come to bury Caesar, not to praise him. The evil that men do lives after them. The good is often turned with their bones. Is that still true? Worth wondering. You take care. I'll speak to you next week. Goodbye.
KPFT 90.1 FM is the Houston Pacifica station for peace and justice, showcasing independent music and news programming. This fall, KPFT is sponsoring a writing contest for Houston area community members. Entries will be judged by members of the KPFT local station board and then by a locally published Houston author. Poetry, fiction, and personal essays are welcome. The theme of our contest this fall is Welcome Home to Peace and Justice. Please submit pieces that somehow tie into any part or interpretation of that theme. For more information and contest rules, please go to kpft.org. You're listening to 90.1 KPFT Houston.
KPFT Houston thanks our community partner, AIDS Foundation Houston, who will be hosting the World AIDS Day Luncheon on Friday, November 30th. The World AIDS Day Luncheon will feature a gourmet meal and an optional bottomless champagne glass. With a headlining keynote speech by Titus Burgess, the proceeds from the World AIDS Day Luncheon will benefit organizations that play a vital role in ending HIV transmission and providing comprehensive health care to the Houston community. Tickets for the November 30th World AIDS Day Luncheon and more information